welcome to The Sanctuary, a safe space to speak from the heart. I'm your host, Israel, and my guests today, Bali and Enzi, and a couple awesome people, friends, and I just found out someone is going to be a Dr. Indian in the near future, but thanks for coming to The Sanctuary today. How are you guys doing?
Thank you.
Pretty good.
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm always excited talking to you guys because you are actually, you know, there's a difference between knowing it and wanting to do it and actually doing it. And you guys are actually doing it, which is like, yeah, it's pretty cool. So I love going back, you know, just jumping in my time machine, jumping back a little bit and saying, well, how did you guys meet first? Let's start with that.
So we actually met over a dating app, not necessarily BDSM focused, but a dating app. Yep. And he had had some information that indicated he was involved in it. And I had dabbled here and there over the years. And so I reached out to him and we met for coffee. Yeah. And talked, and that was about, what, 8 months ago or so?
About 8 months ago or so. And her profile was very mysterious. She alluded that there were several things that she was interested in and some special situation, and that you'd have to meet her in person to really find out exactly what it was all about.
Oh, why did you put that part in your profile?
Well, for a couple reasons, I think, partly because I had, I was in a transition in my life as well from a previous situation. And then also, I think, it was because I was interested in so many like different things and facets. There's so much. You only have so limited information on a profile, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and especially when you're talking about BDSM, a lot of it is, you know, detailed conversation and negotiation. Mm-hmm. And that app really, with it especially being a basic like dating app, it wasn't necessarily set up to be like, you know, hey, this is all the stuff that I'm interested in or I've done before or I might want to do in the future. And so it just kind of alluded to the need to have a meeting in person.
Yep. I've noticed that's kind of a weakness in a lot of dating apps, that they're mostly set up from the originally they were set up from the perspective of just heterosexual relationships that were on some relationship escalator. Mm-hmm. And I guess now at least they acknowledge that other genders exist, but all the other baked in assumptions about what kind of relationships people have and what happens inside of them, still very much the case in almost every single app you use these days.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of true. But I mean, you met each other, so at least some things happen. Like sometimes things like this happen. Okay, then let's go a little bit further. Like, what was your individual history or origin of like, hey, wait, I like this thing. Am I weird?
You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
So I think I had always had an interest in it. I'm 44. So 20 years ago, back up like in college, and I had had a experience that I would not have necessarily at the time considered BDSM related. But it was a experience in which I engaged in a consensual cutting with someone. And it was a very kind of ritualistic experience is kind of how it occurred. Didn't necessarily think much of it. And then over the years, I had kind of dabbled with BDSM. So looking it up, interested in. And then I had a previous partner who I had done some play with, who was my partner, but that partner crossed boundaries. And so I stopped at that time. And then I didn't really do much of anything for, you know, I would say probably like 6 years or so until I met him. And we've had lots of discussions, I think, over the about like mindsets over the years, because there is a point, right, especially where you go, is this weird, right? You look at, you know, being a female, you know, feminism, all that kind of stuff. And you're like, wait, I want to be choked and hit. How do I rectify that within myself?
Yeah, like how is that not domestic violence?
Go ahead, Helen. What about your history?
Well, mine goes back quite some ways. I think I really first got interested in BDSM and kink back in high school. I'd had a girlfriend who was like me. She was an artist, but she was really, really into Hellraiser. And at the time, there were like Hellraiser comic books and, you know, all the Clive Barker novels and all that. So I don't know. We both got such a kick out of it and tried to find ways to integrate some of the imagery into just our relationship. But I mean, we were teenagers, so we didn't really know what the heck we were doing. So, but as time went on, I just kind of stayed engaged with that spirit. And I think every relationship I've had since then has had some little aspects of it. But I think this one is probably the most intense so far.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned someone crossing a boundary. And then I'm thinking with the things you two do, like, that must have been a heck of a boundary, because you people are like in the deep end of the pool. So, yes. Like, did you just like drop, like, when you guys met, how did you get to where you are now? I know it's been 8 months, but like, did you start heavy right away or?
Well, we started pretty light, all considered. I mean, everything was kind of negotiated out ahead of time. When we met, we did some psychometric surveys to get an idea of kind of what we were interested in, how we felt about like our how comfortable we were in terms of like our gender roles and the expectations around those, and just like nitty gritty, what exactly do we like to do? And after we kind of worked through all that and saw where there was overlap, we started our first session very slow with just light impact play and, you know, just making out and stuff like that for a little bit, and kind of went from there.
Well, and he's much more experienced than I am. And the amount of play that I had had with my last partner was really just session, like moments in time that would come along, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes where I'd be hit with an object. But it's in the kind of the context of our relationship dynamic. But this, with him especially being more experienced, I think it was probably about a month, maybe until we had like our first real scene, like where it was like, okay, I'm really restrained. This is really a real like scene that's, you know, 40 minutes long where I'm in a particular position where various objects are being used that has a beginning and an end. And so, and he's very good about, introductions to things and introductions to new things. And so it was just a process where it was like we had our first scene and then things, you know, kind of just ramped up from there as our comfort levels became more comfortable, as we're going to trust each other more, as we had more conversation and as our emotional relationship built. And so then it allowed for more things, more comfortability in doing things. You know, so you figure, you know, 7 months ago, light, you know, kind of impact first scene, you know, to now we're at, you know, blood play is one of my favorite. And so now we're, you know, there and, you know, doing a lot more different, more extreme stuff than we had originally, just because there's an opportunity to explore and try new things. And
I think it made a big difference too, how much time we spent up front trying to understand what we wanted and really just getting to know each other and build trust. I mean, none of this would be possible without those things happening.
And time, because we play at least probably, we're together at least 3 days a week, sometimes four, to play, be together, that kind of stuff. And play is always kind of incorporated in our dynamics, in our relationship dynamics at any given moment in time. So
So much to navigate there. There's the trust part, there's the time part, And you've mentioned your dynamic a couple of parts. So I'll start with the dynamic now. Like, how do you define your dynamic? What is a dynamic? And what is your dynamic?
Well, that actually just shifted last night.
Yeah, a little
So
bit.
last night, actually last night, he just permanently collared me last night. So this is actually my permanent slave collar that I have that has a locking mechanism so that I can't take it off. And so I think the thing with him is, I mean, we can go through all of the terms, and with him, there's many terms. I mean, he's my, I would say first and foremost though, is, I'm solo poly and he's my anchor partner. So he's my safe space. He's my go-to. He's my check-in. He's my all those things. And then he's also my master and my owner, my accomplice. He's my keeper. There's a whole wealth of dynamics that are incorporated for us. Now, this would not be the same for everybody. Everybody would have a specific difference in how their dynamics are, or whether they engage in different dynamics with their, master. But for us, it's very fluid. And so there's moments where our, like moments in time where our dynamic is very much victim perpetrator. And there's moments where our dynamics are very much accomplice and very much, where it's, just submissive dominant moments. And so it's really fluid in how we interact, but he's kind of all encompassing, which is why he's my owner. Like, he really encompasses all of those things and all of the facets of me.
There's a lot of like CNC that's a big part of it too, and occasionally total power exchange. A lot of that owing to my whole kind of embracing the identity of being a master with masters, it's a little different than being an owner. An owner, well, obviously they would own someone and be responsible for kind of managing them, whereas a master has some very similar traits, except that most masters tend towards kind of like TP and CNC situations where you walk into their space and things just kind of happen based on what you've already consented to. So it might not be as scripted out. And that actually plays very well with our dynamics because it means that we get to be very fluid and we can change up what we're doing pretty quickly and transition pretty rapidly from like a kind of like sitting here normal like this to suddenly being engaged in, I don't know, some random pain giving activity or something or some kind of discipline.
So, you mentioned a couple of things that, I mean, you've been in the lifestyle for years and years and years that might, it's like right there at the tip of your tongue, you know what it is, but some of my audience might not have an idea. So I'm just going to ask, what is TPE, what is CNC, and what is solo poly? Those are the three that.
So solo poly is, so I actually have two partners. My master is one of them, and then I also have a dominant that I play with and have a loving relationship with as well. And so I am an independent individual that is with these two individuals, but I'm solo in the sense that I have no desire or plans to do things like move in with one of them, or engage in intertwining my finances, or things like that that you might see in other typical relationships. So I'm kind of my own individual, and then I have these partners that are part of my life, that are an important part of my life. And then CNC, I'll let him speak about TPE, but CNC is consensual, non-consensual. And there's a lot of varying ideas in the community about this particular type of play. CNC for a lot of people does not involve a safe word. So there's essentially no way to stop the scene. You're just at the you were kind of at your dom or your master's mercy on them being cognizant of you and what's going on with you and knowing if they need to stop the scene, but there's no safe word to stop it. For us particularly, we always have a safe word. There's always an underlying thing that's a safe word. So I can stop the scene at any time. And that's for my own personal knowledge. I need to know that I can stop the scene at any time, though I never do. But so for us, the CNC really rides on showing up, and I don't know what's going to happen. Or,
Right.
you know, CNC would be like, we're driving in the car to go to lunch, and he might haul off and start punching me in the leg. It just, that's just the dynamic.
That happened the other day.
Yeah. And so there's that. It's consensual, non-consensual. It's consensual because it's pre-negotiated, but it's non-consensual because of,
Yeah, the kind of random kind
yeah,
of nature of it.
for us personally.
Yeah, and TPE, that would be total power exchange. So you can imagine that would go pretty well along with CNC, because essentially in total power exchange, you're surrendering your ego to someone else almost entirely. Now, I don't always lean into that, but I like being able to raise the specter of it at varying times, so that way she has an opportunity to feel, autonomous, empowered. Like she's making her own decisions and self-actualizing, and then I can just suddenly yank the rug from under her and let her feel kind of, I don't know, humbled.
It's part of the fun.
Yeah, exactly.
So trust was the other thing. And she mentioned that you have a good way of introducing things and introducing new things. So I'm thinking they kind of go hand in hand, the trust part and introducing things. You want to talk me through that?
Sure. So a lot of it is kind of based around the idea that trying to understand more about her and about how our relationship functions, it kind of gives me insight into things that we could enjoy and where our real limits are. So I like to spend a lot of time kind of prepping her, kind of introducing ideas over the course of a few weeks so that she's aware of things that I'm thinking about. And of course, Violet brings things to me quite often, things that she's interested in, experiences that she wants to have. And we often will spend a lot of time actively kind of fantasizing or just outright hallucinating what these experiences would be like beforehand. We'll do a lot of research, if there's medical concerns around certain activities, if there's best practices and stuff like that. And then when it does finally get introduced in play, typically there's a discussion before that happens because there's a lot of excitement about whatever it is. If it involves different, not kind of new objects that may have exotic properties, like they may be extremely sharp or have strange textures, things like that, I'll make sure Violet actually gets to kind of examine those before they're used on her. Partially so that she has some idea of what to expect, but also because, frankly, it gets her really excited. She's like a kid with a brand new toy. So,
Right.
and
Yeah.
oh, I
Go
was
ahead.
just gonna say, I think that a lot of it is, you know, desensitization. And so, you know, if I go to him and say, "Hey, I really want to be drowned sometime. I really want you to bind me and drown me," then he'll do something like put a task on my for my tasks, like every week I hold my breath underwater by myself, just in the bathtub, just to desensitize any fear that I have of that. Work on holding my breath longer, so that when that time comes, I am ready at like the best kind of capacity that I am to experience that. And usually the most extreme things are my requests,
Oh,
is
yes.
typically what it is. This is my requests.
See,
It's
and
easier to do it when
she's
the
gotten a
person
lot
asks
going
for
in
it.
favor.
Huh?
It's easier to do it when the person asks for it.
It
Yes.
is, isn't it? But that's a lot of what I like to do, kind of create an environment where she can feel safe to explore and where she can actually just be courageous.
So the other thing you guys do from time to time is inviting other people into your scenes. And, you know, I mean, whether it's upbringing or just life or what is expected, there's like elements of jealousy that happens. Like, how do you guys navigate that when you're inviting other people into your circle?
I don't know. Have you experienced jealousy in that regard yet, or?
No, so I have prior to being solo poly, I was actually the primary partner in multiple relationships that were non-monogamous or polyamorous. So I've been, identified myself as poly in general for probably like 20 years. So I don't have any jealousy, and I'm a voyeur. So I like watching my partners like have sex with other people, do things with other people. It gets me excited. So I have not had any issues of jealousy, and both, master and my dom have been in primary relationships while with me. So there's kind of this constant web of people already that are involved in each other's lives that have physical and emotional connections with my partners as well already. So I kind of came in with that already happening. So I haven't had any jealousy.
Yeah. So you're almost wired for this kind of stuff from the start.
Yes.
Whereas I had to be introduced to it. What's the old joke that you were born into it, but I merely adopted it.
Right.
But
yeah.
But over the years, I've just kind of built up enough emotional calluses that, you know, rather than getting jealous, you know, I start to kind of think, well, what exactly is it I'm jealous about? Because people who are jealous, it's because they want something someone else doesn't have. If I'm here with you, well, that kind of says that I already have you, don't I? So then it's a question of whether I'm being territorial or not. But if I'm sharing space and time with you and somebody else, then, you know, why, what am I being territorial about? So I guess I've kind of reached a point where I've sort of built a lot of like more hefty psychological defenses against those types of things. And where, when they do get a chance to rear their heads, it's usually in some playful way, because, you know, if I'm going to have feelings like that, I might as well use them for something constructive.
Well, and I would say he's like me in the sense that there's a part of him that excites him when he, even if he's not there, because I do slut time. So I have time that I make myself available. We call it slut time. Oh, yeah. That I make myself available like a couple times a month just for like casual sex. For people that are interested in casual sex, not impact. I don't do BDSM play with anybody else except my two partners, or unless they're present with me, whilst if somebody else is doing BDSM play with me. But I have casual sex encounters where they're not there. My partners aren't there. And part of the exciting part about it is hearing what I did, or watching videos that I posted, or pictures that I took during that adventure or whatever.
Yeah, that kind of free use stuff is actually part and parcel of our arrangement too.
So that's another term that again, you have like all these years of experience, but like for the lay person, what is free use?
Yeah, so free use is essentially where a given partner is encouraged or perhaps even required to have sex with other partners. Usually this happens under the observation of whoever their other partner happens to be. Sometimes it's not. Oftentimes it does involve having to create things like videos and pictures, just something to show that it really happened. Because part of the kink is knowing that this person is out there doing whatever, that they're out there enjoying themselves, using their bodies. And when you're a partner to someone that is being sent out for free use purposes, it helps if you are a bit of a voyeur, you know, and you really have to be into something that in the E&M community they refer to as compersion, which is being able to derive pleasure vicariously through your partners.
Okay, so you've broken down compersion, but you use another acronym, E&M. What is that?
Oh yeah, ethical non-monogamy. So it's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah, ethical. Your partners know about it. So like if he were to decide to set up time with somebody, he would tell me, hey, I'm going to go meet with somebody. They might turn into a partner. They might not. They could be a person just for him. But it's ethical in the sense that it's all negotiated. We all know about it. It's all an agreement.
And whoever I meet up with, they would also know that too. they'd have to know up front that I was involved with other people, not necessarily how many other partners, but that would be information that they'd be privy to if they wanted to know.
Ryan.
So it's kind of like one thing that comes out is there's a lot of communication that happens. How do you
Yes.
navigate all that communication?
Well, no,
And
I
with the
think
different partners.
we're both kind of talkative anyway, so I don't think we do quiet parts quiet anyway.
No, I'm probably me. I would say, well, I would say both my partners are, but we over communicate. I mean, you can't really over communicate when you're talking about things like, hey, I really want to try needles, right? You over communicate about those things. And so I think it's just a lot of that communication. And a lot of our communication doesn't happen in person. A lot of our communication is through messages, through we have an Amazon list that he'll add to, and I'll be like, oh, I saw you added Staples. Well, I had mentioned Staples a week before in a message, right? And so now it's now hit the list, and now it's, and so it's so that when we're in person, I mean, sure, we do communicate when we're in person, but a lot of our negotiation and stuff is done when we're not together over daily messages and conversation and things like that.
We maintain a lot of virtual communications. And for myself, I have a bit of a background in something called nonviolent communications, which is it's exactly what it sounds like, but it's kind of focused on the idea of being able to speak to resolve conflict in ways that are, if at all possible, kind of mutually beneficial, and kind of being mindful about how you describe ideas and your perspective on things. A lot of times, we'll focus on like what we're feeling and how that motivates us to certain actions, and if it motivates us to certain actions. I also have a bit of a history with some various clinical what do they call it like psychiatry techniques, things like cognitive and dialectical behavioral therapy. So a lot of those principles really pop up in kind of our and how we relate with each other. And it's also how I relate with all my other partners too. It's a lot easier to be consistent that way. And I find that it's a lot that by leaning into those techniques, it means that a lot of things that could be like conflicts can maybe not be avoided, but can be mitigated.
There is this yin and yang thing, night and day, where you're like, I'm feminist, and why do I want to get choked or bitten? And you're like, well, I'm like, compassionate and I practice compassion, but why am I interested in actually giving this thing? But there's a complimentary vibe between you wanting it and him being able to give that. But now spreading that, Tony's like, what do you even like about like the physical sensation of it? The giving and the receiving.
The physical sensation of giving and receiving. Oh, why? That's a big. That
Yeah,
depends on the scene and the implements and the mindset. Actually, that was one thing that I mentioned to him, like a couple weeks ago, is there was a particular. I am very much a masochist. I am a hands down, like that's where my heart lies, is in masochism. And for me, it's like a science and it's a challenge. So I see something and I go, I want to do that. I want to figure that out and I want to do it. I want to master that implement. And so it's very methodical for me. And so that mindset is not. It's not a submissive mindset. It's incredibly selfish. It is, I want this thing and he's going to give it to me. And this, and then, the exchange comes in the opposite direction, right? Because then I submit to him for whatever, if it's the vampire paddle, which I love. Now, the vampire paddle can, the way that
It's very friendly. It's a very friendly, simple device. It just,
But an implement can be one that can cause me to stay in my very masochistic, challenging mindset, or he can break me down emotionally to where I'm just a mess. And now that same implement has two different facets of mentality. And so it's going to feel different physically, just because of the totality of the circumstances. So like we were talking about how there was one scene that we did where I was very much in a submissive, broken down, just take me, I can't, you know, mindset. Turn around and do the same scene, but in a different mindset, and it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. Even if it's the exact same scene with the exact same implements. And so it just kind of, I mean, it kind of depends, you know. I mean, I can, me being restrained during an immediate scene or during a scene to be, say, we'll say punched, because I really like punching play. So to be restrained on a scene where I'm being punched versus the random moments in time where we could be gathering stuff for dinner in the house and he randomly punches me. Those are not the same mindsets. One's a specified scene with a beginning and an end, and one is a random moment of violence, which, you know, for us, our random moments of violence are, I consider those are like our love. Those are like our, you know, him all of a sudden smacking me in the face randomly while we're doing something around the house, for me, constant would be the same thing as, you know, a kiss on the cheek. So
This is true.
Yeah, it just kind of depends. And physically, everything has different healing times. I have marks that take, that I can get marks during play that go away before the next morning. I've got marks that take days to heal, months to heal, and I have permanent scars from cuts and things like that. So, you know, and it all is going to just depend on a lot of things. Sometimes I'm really, really sore the next day. Sometimes I'm not. So it just kind of depends on a lot of factors, a lot of factors.
Yeah. The whole giving and receiving thing too. So one thing that I really enjoy about it all is, so for giving, one thing that I appreciate is being able to really, get to know someone and understand what makes them tick. Because a lot of what I appreciate is kind of that imagining what's going on in the other person's head while they're experiencing all these different sensations. And to me, it's really fascinating that something that for somebody else could be considered really painful or terrifying, while she may have those same reactions, she's still really enjoying it. So then there's that dichotomy between the enjoyment that I know she's experiencing and maybe just the torment that she may be going through because of whatever is happening in a given scene. And there's also the physiological piece to it, right? There's a discomfort that everybody feels whenever they're hurting somebody else. It's just kind of a natural part of being a human. But there's also that rush of feeling empowered to be able to act on someone's body in these different ways. And some of those ways may seem as if they are completely outlandish to a certain extent. So I often will find myself just laughing uncontrollably in the middle of scenes because of that. And I know in terms of receiving pain, there's this weird thing the body does under those circumstances where if you're receiving just enough pain to really hurt, but not enough to completely react, your body's still registering that as an attack. So it does all of the fight or flight things in the background. And that adrenaline rush that comes with it as it slowly builds just makes the scenes more and more intense. And if you combine that with actually enjoying receiving pain for whatever particular reason, whether it's the circumstances, whether it's the actual sensations themselves or some combination of it all, then it starts to really, really kind of build and build and build until, you know, there's some cathartic release that happens
at the end of that. And I will say that was one of the things as I've processed, because there's a lot of processing that goes with all of this, a lot of processing, especially considering that I identify myself as a very independent, autonomous, feminist female, there's a lot of processing that goes through that when you're you know, doing all this type of play. I'm an adrenaline junkie. Hands down, I'm an adrenaline junkie. This is just the adult version of the adrenaline rush that I'm seeking. Because go back to childhood and you can see all the times I rode all the scary, scary roller coasters, all the haunted houses that I used to go in and just be so scared to do. But I do them every time, no matter how scared I was. And so, you know, fast forward, I've always been an adrenaline person. I just, this is the adult version and outlet for it now.
Thanks for sharing. Go ahead.
I think the feminism actually stuff plays into that very well too, because a lot of that, it's really about being able to choose how you live your life and how you use your body. And there's nothing at all, I think, incompatible about those two ideas. In fact, I mean, if it's something that you enjoy that is a legitimate form of self-actualization, then it's perfectly compatible with feminist ideas. In fact, it's the very basis of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And something that comes out, it's like, I mean, even though it's happening physical and there's like the physiological aspect of it, a lot of it is mental, because it's like mindset, state of mind, all that stuff. And talking of the hormones, adrenaline and all that, something that comes to mind though is like, when you're doing this thing, I mean, you have to take care of yourself physically, but mentally also, how do you take care of yourself?
So for me, a lot of it is, self-care. Self-care is actually wrapped into my tasks that he puts on it, on me. So, I do a lot of journaling. That's also part of tasks that he has me do. I do a lot of journaling. We do a lot of aftercare, after scenes. So there's a lot of, you know, for us, everybody's aftercare looks different, but for us, it's a lot of cuddling, a lot of just, it might be depending on what type of scene it was. It could be a lot of crying and just being held afterwards. Mm-hmm. I also, for not just BDSM, I mean, per se, but I also go to therapy weekly. I do massage every other week. I go to Cairo, which actually helps my body, especially with being bound so much. And all my providers know that I'm heavily involved in the BDSM and kink community as well. So there's a lot of that stuff for me mentally, but I will say mentally wise, besides the aftercare, a lot of my masochism has been taking back situations that have happened to me non-consensually and making them consensual. So, I mentioned a prior partner that had crossed a boundary. I happened to find in the implement that he crossed the boundary with all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And so my process was, I'm taking this back. Mm-hmm. Now he's going to hit me with that object that crossed that boundary, because that object holds emotion within it. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to own that now. Now it's mine. Now I have the choice. Mm-hmm. It's mine. And it's no longer a non-consensual action that happened to me. I have taken it back. I have reclaimed that incident, that moment in time, that toy, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a big thing for me. So, and you know, in a lot of those, some of those times, you know, need a ton of aftercare afterwards. And some of them, you know, I'm just like, yeah, I took this back. This is mine. Nobody can take it from me again.
That's right. And for myself, you know, so as a child, I was a witness to domestic violence. You know, my father was very, very abusive to my mom, culminating in, he beat the tar out of her on like a Christmas day of all things. Wow. So for me, there's a lot of feelings that, you know, that I have to kind of navigate when I'm participating in this kind of play, because to me, it's not a value-neutral set of activities to be engaged in, and it's not really just play. So I'm engaged in a lot of therapy myself, and I probably do way, way more mindful meditation than perhaps anybody should do in a given day. I find that really helps me kind of balance myself out a bit and, find ways to reconcile kind of the actions I'm taking with the intent behind them and the feelings that go along with
It's 8 months now. It's gonna be a year soon. Like, do you guys have this big plan for the next, for year one, like your first anniversary together?
I don't think we've made a big plan yet, although we do have a variety of kind of things in flight that'll probably culminate around the time that our anniversary hits.
I would have to defer to Master to determine whether anything was planned or not, because typically I don't know. Hence getting collared last night. I showed up and he was like, "Tonight's the night." I'm like, "Ah, had no idea." Okay. I don't know necessarily. I mean, we have lots of thoughts and ideas, I think, about the future in general. We really want to go to Kink Fest next year. I so badly want to go. I have kind of these ideas that at some point in my life I would like to, do things like teach or talk at BDSM and Kink Fests, and because I think I have a slightly different idea about masochism, submission, slavery, than a lot of other people might have, and I'd like to be able to explore that, have those conversations with people in those venues. The word usage of word is words is sometimes highly what's the word, debated within the community. And so I don't know. I have this envision of me talking on a stage someday, or I want to do public show. I'd love to go to a place where we can play publicly in front of a whole audience. And so I think we have lots of ideas and goals and plans, not necessarily for the first year, but that will happen in the future as the relationship, morphs and, goes where it's gonna go.
I
Yeah,
think
before I
that's
let
going
you,
to be even more of the artwork too.
Oh yeah, artwork. He does a lot of artwork,
Yeah, quite a bit. And
yeah.
they're a
Before
fun
I let you
subject.
guys go, you talked about, well, I stumbled into the day after you got colored. So do you want to just mention what a color is and what coloring means to you guys?
Yeah,
Cool.
so I've been his, submissive, his I've been a lot of aspects to him over this 8 months, but we had started talking several months ago very specifically about permanent collaring. And permanent collaring in the sense that, of course it's still consensual. I can leave. I mean, sure, I could take it off. I could go find a hex key and I could take it off and say, sir, I'm done. Because it's still consensual. But we had been talking about it for the last couple months, and our relationship really hit its sweet spot about 3 or 4 months ago, where we just, the amount of trust and intertwinement and just all of us, he's my safe space. And while I have, much love for my dominant, and he is one of my partners, he is my dominant. And he, though, is he's my person, he's my human. He's the one that I want to do scary stuff with. It'd be him. So if somebody was like, I don't know, I want to do something extreme, like hit you with a brick, I'd be like, oh my, well, I'll do it with him. He's the person that I feel comfortable with. You want to hit me with a brick? Sure, let's try that. I'm interested with him. He's my safe space. And he's like home. And so it just made sense that there was this progression of the relationship to where I really was, we're almost like solidifying kind of like and symbolizing the relationship that's kind of morphed over the last 3 to 4 months. And so he's the person that I run stuff by. He's the one that can say, no, she can't do that. No, I'm not gonna let her do that. Or whatever it could be. That's for me,
Yeah.
not for you.
Collars are kind of an interesting thing in the community because some people just wear collars when they're playing. And all it is just something that says, at this particular moment, I have control of you. Or sometimes it's just simply for the sake of utility. It's easier to attach people to things if they have lots of O-rings on them. And if you want to attach something to somebody's neck, if they have on a collar, it's a lot easier to do. You know, lead them around by a chain, or hold them in position, or something along those lines. But collars can also be symbols of particular types of bonds. I think almost everyone likes to have some kind of a reminder of someone that's important to them in their life, or of a relationship they have. For vanilla people, there's not a whole lot of things they can really use that way. I mean, I suppose as a teenager, you could wear somebody's varsity jacket or a promise ring or something like that. But once you're an adult, there's not a whole heck of a lot that functions that way. Either you're getting a wedding ring or an engagement ring, or I don't know, good luck. You know, you hope, you know, get a nice card for Valentine's Day, I guess. But in our community, there's a lot more possibilities in terms of how we express the importance of relationships, and collars can be used for that too. Many times when people receive a permanent collar, it's because they feel a very strong bond between them and the person that's giving them that gift. And in return, they're giving them a gift typically of some brand of submission. Perhaps it's total submission, perhaps it's submission under very specific circumstances. But either way, they're still wearing that thing that's a reminder of that energy in their life and the importance of that relationship.
And one thing I will say is, collaring for everybody is different. And there are people that would probably debate with me that I'm not a true slave or that I'm not a, true sub, because of the amount of autonomy that I have within my relationship with my master. But that's what works for me, and that's important for me to maintain certain things. But as far as like the permanent collaring, oh sure, if I was out in the world at work and he were to message me and say, "Can you go in the bathroom, take a pic, send it to me?" Damn well, I'm going to get out of my chair and go take a pic and send it to him. I am his submissive all the time, not just when I'm here playing. I am his all of the time. And so there's other things that are woven into other moments in time or whatever, where that may come into.
And different owners have different philosophies on how they manage these relationships. Some people want their permanently collared people to be underfoot at all times. They have to live in their house, walk around naked, on a leash, and doing, you know, perhaps just standing in the corner waiting to be ordered to do something. And I don't know, it's really not my style, you know. To me, all that stuff seems so like 19th century, and here we are in the 21st century. Don't we have some better way to command people? And you know, for my reference point, I really look more towards the lives that people live as office workers. You know, we're all slaves in that sense, in a very different kind of way. And that the type of bondage that we experience, that feeling of authority that's over us, is more in line with something from, say, like the like Bentham's Panopticon, rather than like an actual like chattel slave arrangement, where the bonds are within you, and you have to police yourself, knowing that some big other is staring at you the entire time, exercising that power over you.
You mentioned that, but I think I have to say that, you know, the mental part is actually way more powerful than the physical part, right? Because like you said, even when you're at work, just one line can make you do the thing versus like, I have to be there for that thing to happen. You know, when you mention that thing, it's like, it's cool because like you're not sure if the thing is there watching, but you know the eye in the sky is there anyway, so I'm gonna do the thing.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, things like that I think are really helpful to get out of the daily, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. I think sometimes we function on just patterns of behavior instead of like, so when you're sitting there in a moment, just sitting there doing paperwork, and all of a sudden it's like, you have 10 minutes to go do this thing real quick for me. It gets you moving out of your moment. You come back to your desk and you're like, oh, you've almost like renewed, like something got you out of that constant patterns. And for me with collaring, you know, I've been in multiple abusive relationships, multiple. And so maintaining my autonomy, especially giving myself to somebody, is a really big deal. And having those, that ability to have that is a really big deal. And I would not have been a good slave for many other masters out in the world. They would be like, oh my God, you're running the show here. And I'm like, well, no, I'm just a masochist who has so much to explore and do. And I found somebody who I feel comfortable doing all the crazy shit that I want to do it with. So I want to keep that.
It's always pleasant talking to you guys, and I don't even notice the time fly, but I have to respect your time. So I'm going to let you guys go with this question, though. What you have built is aspirational, right? I know it's like 8 months, but it's like you guys are doing things that people have been together for years, and just the level of communication. So I'm thinking, you know, if someone is out there watching or listening and they're like, huh, that's so cool, I'd love to build towards that. What words of advice can you share to this person?
No, you go first.
I would say, really build your compassion muscles. Now, I know that sounds a little strange considering, you know, that maybe I'm going to pull you aside in a bit and, I don't know, smack you around or something. But really, it really does boil down to compassion, and really start with self-compassion, because the more you're able to accept yourself for who you are and really love yourself for who you are, whatever you happen to be, the easier it will be to extend that to other people. Now, you would think that that would mean, oh, that might make you less willing to participate in BDSM type activities. But I think it's quite the contrary, because if you have a better understanding of what other people are going through, the kind of burdens they carry, and you're willing to really get in touch with them on a deep emotional level, then that's the fuel for the fire for a relationship that can support a lot of different type of dynamics, and not just BDSM ones.
Mm-hmm. Everything he said, I think on my end as a submissive masochist slave, I would say, you know, especially starting out, research, yes. Get on websites, talk to people. You have to get information. Being a masochist, I mean, I could end up in a really incredibly dangerous situation just meeting somebody completely random and being like, yes, I'm comfortable with them hitting me with all these different objects that could injure me. Mm-hmm. And so research, communicate, build a relationship with people. We're on FetLife a lot, and I've built a community on FetLife where I can go to people and say, hey, I'm doing this type of play. Do you have any? And I've learned things, because people are like, oh, you did it for that long? I only do it for this long. I'd be careful because of this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. And so you have to build a community. You have to research. I think as a masochist, I would be more concerned for isolated people out there. And even yes. Some of the relationships that I've seen that are very isolated, non-monogamous, total power exchange, ownership, all those things, they still have a community. I still chat with them all the time about whatever their kink is or their thing. So research, learn. There's so many things. There's online things that you can just sit and listen about dynamics. Virtual, turn your camera off. Nobody has to know who you are. Put there your name is Frog. I don't know, right? Doesn't matter, right? But where you can remain totally anonymous and still learn. And when I had the person that crossed the boundary, part of my failure was I did not seek community, and I did not educate myself. Mm-hmm. And I think had I done those things, that situation might have turned out differently. Mm-hmm. I did not do that at that time 7 years ago. Whereas, and I feel like I am, so I can come to him and say, hey, let's talk about this or that, or I don't know how I feel about this or whatever. So
see, but that's where the compassion comes in, because then you can right. kind of realize that this thing happened and not blame yourself for it. You can accept that it did happen and that maybe you did have some responsibility, but you're not the one that did that.
No, but I think I would have served myself better for creating an environment where I had more knowledge and education than I had at the time. And
There you go.
that was what I would have done different last time starting out. So that's what I would seek. And things like FetLife are great. You can be totally anonymous and just look and listen and hear and watch and view and that's what I would say on my end.
Wow. Super educational. I'm thinking of having a part two with you guys. Thank you so much for sharing and thanks for coming to the sanctuary today.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.